communicator, Dr. Stephen Ward. This seance was recorded on the 30th of July, 1964. Medium, Leslie Flint.
About a month, if that. It does seem a long time. Possibly it's because I've been around quite a bit and it seems a long time not being able to get through. As a matter of fact, I've been coming to see you pretty well every other day or so, just to see how you're getting on while the boys are away. I like to keep an eye on you, you know.
Oh, that's very nice of you.
Not that you haven't got plenty of other people, but nevertheless, I feel that I'm, well, one of the family.
Of course you are.
I feel it's like the unpaid lodger.
I'm very, very glad to know that you are around.
Well, I feel really a kind of, almost you might say, guest in the house, you know.
Yes.
I feel it's open house.
For you, certainly.
I must say, you're looking very well. I say, could you really put that on for me?
What? Put what on?
A dress.
I didn't think about that. Why?
I don't know, but I like the colouring.
You like the colour?
Yes, very nice.
I know, you like me in mauves.
I like soft pastel colours, mauves and soft greens, soft blues.
I tried to get some mauves.
Actually, mauves would look very nice with your hair.
Out of fashion now, they don't have them.
Oh, well, why bother about fashion? The best dressed women are always out of fashion.
People are in fashion. I never bother about fashion.
What?
I never bother about fashion. I've just got to put on what. I haven't got a beautiful figure, though. It's all right for women who are tall and graceful.
Well, there's no fashion over here. Not that people evidently don't design, I suppose they do. I really don't know much about that side of it yet, but certainly it seems to me that no one can design anything for you until you yourself are capable of designing it. In other words, I think as you think and as you become, so in a sense, so do you dress. I know this sounds rather absurd, but I can't help it, but I've discovered that it's something from within oneself as to the sort of even the colours you wear, and even almost you might say the style, if it is style at all, extraordinary, because I've seen people in all manner of colours and all manner of styles when it comes to that. But I'm beginning to realise and learn now that, well, one can almost judge, not that I didn't mean judge in the wrong sense, but one can almost tell what kind of a person the person is by the very clothes which they're wearing. It's as if in some strange way, by their very nature and their very being, they're able to clothe or drape themselves in colour and material and in shape and style according to their character and their nature. It's terribly interesting. I'm learning to know people almost at a glance.
Oh, that's wonderful.
It's most extraordinary. Well, what I mean by that is I don't perhaps really know the person in the sense of knowing them deep down, but one can tell more or less the general character of a person by the colouring that is not only with what they're wearing, but the sort of glow that sort of comes from them, and the inner consciousness that one has, or realisation that one has, of the person's temperament and nature and their interests too. It's extraordinary. Of course, not everybody here, for instance, is highly sensitive or highly artistic or anything like that, but it's an extraordinary thing how even presumably the most ordinary person, after they've been here a while, and the subtle changes that take place as they assimilate new knowledge and experience, how they do change and do begin to appreciate often things which normally on earth they would never have thought of, let alone even appreciate. I mean, here you see this sort of wonderful sort of change coming over people. It isn't a sudden thing, of course, but it's something which one is very sensitive to and of. I think the whole point about life here, as far as I can gather, is the sensitivity of the person, the feeling that one has, the emotional reaction, the sensitivity towards all sorts of things appertaining to others, and the realization that one has within oneself that even an individual such as myself, or any individual for that matter, can play a very important part in the lives and the character building and the moulding and the developing and what have you of other people. I've learned a great deal from so many people that I feel as if I'm assimilating all sorts of things from all sorts of sources and all sorts of people. And gradually my own nature is changing. I wouldn't say that in some senses I'm vastly different to what I was on earth, but I can sense and feel within myself a realization of things which certainly has changed me. I feel much more placid, for instance. Now, when I was on earth, I didn't know what it was to be placid. In fact, it was one of the most difficult things for me to be able to relax. In fact, I don't think I ever really relaxed. If my body ever relaxed, which was seldom, my brain never did. It was always terribly active. I was always sort of churning out things within myself, and I was often a step ahead all the time. Even when I used to speak to people, if I got sort of excited, I found that because of my wanting to say so much, that I would often be incoherent. I used to lose a sort of control, almost, you might say, because of the words would come gushing out, and somehow I never seemed to be able to get them out quick enough. It was confusing in a way, and you know, one of the reasons, not only because I like coffee, for instance, but I used to find it soothing, and a cigarette and all that sort of thing, but of course it was a sort of antidote. But the point is that I can see now myself in such a different way. I can see myself as I certainly have never seen myself before, certainly not when on earth. I can see how differently I might have done certain things, of course, and how much better it would have been if I had, but at the same time I can see myself without any sort of feeling of self-satisfaction. I don't mean that, but I can see that in a sense I couldn't have been any different to what I was. It wouldn't have been my life anyway, and it wouldn't have been good possibly for me. I may have been good for other people to be different, but for me I had to be the way I was, and I realized that a great deal of that was due to a kind of pressure that came from outside myself. I don't mean exactly purely the physical side of my life, but I realize now that many of the tendencies that I had and many of the emotions that I felt, which sometimes I didn't even understand myself, and certainly a certain amount of the talent that I had in an artistic sense, was coming from not only within myself, which was a natural thing, but it was also coming from outside. I realize now something I never realized before, that without realizing it, I was a medium. In other words, I was sensitive to such an extent that I would find myself doing things or expressing myself often in a way which surprised me. Often, for instance, I'd say something. In fact, I might even be having an ordinary conversation with someone, and then quite out of the blue, I'd hear myself saying things which were almost foreign to my nature. And I realized that I was hypersensitive, and therefore very much under the influence, without realizing it, of other forces. And sometimes, of course, let's face it, I was also affected by the very conditions around and about me materially, and also people on your side influenced me, possibly much more than I realized at the time. Indeed, there were many things, certain things that I did, that really, if I could have been a more rational sort of person, I'd never have done. It was other people's influence was very strong upon me on both sides.
Mm-hmm. Have you found out who were influencing you now that you've gone over there?
Oh yes, I have, as a matter of fact. I realized that now that I was being influenced by various people. Some were very good people, especially who were trying to influence me in the right way, and they certainly influenced me in regard to my artistic work, my sketching and painting, that sort of thing. And of course I also realized that I was helped considerably with my healing. I mean, I used to probably, in a sense, assume that I had that something, that I certainly had studied too, but I realize now that the healing that was done through me, a great deal of it, was done through the agency of a certain doctors on this side who found in me an instrument or a medium through which they could work, and which they could manipulate, and through which they could pour, you might say, a kind of spiritual force, or certainly a rejuvenating force, which was of a psychic nature, in any case, which benefited people. This is quite apart from my own genuine talent or knowledge, but I realize now that often things that happened through my agency were things which, in a sense, I was only the medium or instrument for. I realize now that I should have been, and I could have been, a very good medium, which possibly would have been a wonderful thing to have been, but after having seen how mediums go through the mill like this one, I'm jolly glad in a sense that I didn't. But that's being selfish, I suppose. Actually, I wouldn't like to be a medium. I would hate to be a medium in a sense. I'd like to serve and help and work for people and bring them comfort and
healing. But you'll be happier there now.
Oh yes, I've no desire to come back. And I'm quite sure, I can't imagine myself coming back on Earth. I don't want to come back, and I don't think there's any real need. I don't mean by that that I've reached such a high state of affection. I would hate anyone to think that I'd become bumptious about it, but I think that my last lap, you might say, on Earth was definitely something that I had to experience. I don't mean by that that everything's preordained. I think that's a ghastly thought. But I do think that people's lives must fall into a certain pattern. I think there's no doubt about that. The more I've studied other people and their lives on Earth, it seems to me that although they have free will, at the same time they have to move from A to Z or A to B or whatever it happens to be. They can't really deviate. They may be able to go a little to this side or a little to that side, but eventually they must come back on the narrow line. I've come to that conclusion that everything is mathematical. By that I mean scientifically. Not that I'm going to try and prove anything scientifically, I think that's impossible. But I do think, and I've come to this conclusion, I've discussed it with others, and they all agree that although it doesn't seem like it on Earth, and it's certainly not possible to prove it, that everything does fall in with mathematics. And it seems to me that science, and I've discussed this with one or two people, and they say that science will prove mathematically and scientifically the reality of life and life beyond death, and how that what seems to be death isn't by any means. In fact, in a sense, it's only a certain layer, which is like layers of consciousness, really, from what I've been able to gather. That when you're on Earth, you have a layer of consciousness which enables you to experience and to know about certain things within certain limits. But there are certain gifted people that can evolve or develop while yet on Earth to a higher layer of consciousness. It's all a matter of layer of consciousness, because everything that is happening is happening, but just because you are in a condition of life where your consciousness is only able to pierce so far, you have no knowledge of what's outside it. It's like being in a room that's dark. You don't see anything, but you sense things, and as you become more adjusted to darkness, so you can, to some extent, in a minute way, perceive. But once you switch the light on, then you see everything in the room. It's just that you are only experiencing what you yourself can experience under the conditions which you are at that particular moment. And there's no doubt about it that there are many, many layers of consciousness, and it is possible, while still on Earth, to pierce and enter into a higher layer of consciousness. But it's something which obviously will take time and experience and great patience, and certainly it means that you would have to reject a great number of things which may seem important, which within oneself you probably know are not important. In other words, it's, I suppose, like living in two worlds at the same time, and in a sense that applies to me now. In a sense, I'm living in more than two worlds. I mean, for instance, I'm living in my own environment, that is the condition in which I find myself, in which I'm fully at home, in which I'm fully aware, fully conscious, and know all that happens around and about me, of which I am part. And I'm also conscious, for instance, of the Earth by entering into it and entering, as it were, within the mentalities of the individuals that may be on Earth that I'm interested in, such as you and this house and so on, and therefore I see and perceive and know because I'm entering into that layer of consciousness. But I'm also perceiving and entering, slowly but surely, into a higher layer of consciousness. In other words, I'm beginning to perceive, I'm beginning to uplift, in a sense, I suppose you would say, my conscious self into a new form or new condition. It's an extraordinary thing how, if you want to, and you sincerely believe and have faith and make the effort, how you can experience all sorts of things which may be quite abnormal to other people, which they themselves see little or nothing and know probably nothing. Point is that people are only blind because they won't see, because they won't make the effort. In other words, people just cling to that which they know,
right,
and have no desire to know any further than that.
That's true. You're a speaker, you see, sir.
Well, I'm really anxious to find out everything I possibly can.
Yes. And you know, talking about all that, that is why there is, you know, astrology and numerology.
Oh yes, well, all those things do add up.
Yes.
I didn't
yes.
quite know exactly how much, I wouldn't like to say, but they all play a part. There's no doubt about it that you are, for instance, on Earth, influenced
yes.
to some extent by the planetary system, and there's no doubt that there are certain times when certain peoples are affected by the movements of the planets.
Yes, yes.
You see, after all said and done, what people don't realize is, I think the average person looks up to the sky and it sees the stars and it sees the planetary system, but because there's this vast distance away, they look upon it as something outside, far beyond them. But actually, if once you grasp the reality that space and time itself, for that matter, in a sense, has no existence for one. I mean, it has an existence while you have the realization or the consciousness that you are material, and you don't assume or don't think upon yourself as being beyond the material. In other words, once a person realizes that they have a soul, that they have a spirit, and that the body is merely the casing, that they can enter other worlds, other conditions of thought. After all, it's all a thought condition, a thought vibration. Once you realize the immensity of it all, once you can draw upon it, that's the point. It's like a magnet. If only
yes.
you could realize that you can draw, be drawn to these things.
Oh.
It's very difficult to explain, but I suppose you might say some people are rather like pins. They don't realize it, but they're rather like pins and sort of lying around idle, but it takes a mighty magnet to draw them up. But you know, once you realize the power of the magnet and you respond to it, it's amazing how much more you are able to understand, how much more you're able to visualize and see and experience. I mean, it hasn't taken me so very long to adjust myself and to learn to know myself and to understand the purpose and the meaning of things. I realize the immensity of life. I realize that one life is nothing. It is but it's like a grain of sand in the desert. I think we have not just perhaps two or three, but probably dozens and dozens of lives. Some people probably more than others. Some people perhaps come back on Earth deliberately of their own choosing for some specific work they want to do or have to do or have been chosen to do. I think that it's pretty obvious that everybody has been back and forth, and that it's very necessary, and that the Earth world is far more than it seems. It's not just what it seems on the surface. It's a very necessary nursery in which we have to sort of learn and experience all sorts of things. It's a school. Sometimes we have jolly bad pupils, and we just have to come back again. Sometimes we don't stay very long, but there again, it isn't the length of time you stay that seems to matter. It's what you've assimilated within yourself, or what perhaps you may have achieved, not necessarily for yourself, because it seems to me that often the most progress is made when you forget yourself. I think it seems to me that selfishness is one of the biggest barriers to real progress.
Yes, yes. That is right.
Oh, I'm learning a lot. Marshall's been a great help to me, and of course, Frederick, although he probably hasn't said much to you yet, but he probably will. But you know, he's a curious chap.
Oh.
He's one of the few people that I haven't yet been able to unravel.
Look,
He's very, I don't know how to put this. I suppose he's like a man of a thousand faces, you might say. he's a complex character, and you see, he has the ability to, let me tell you, he hasn't told you, I don't suppose he has. He will let you know what he thinks you ought to know, no more, no less.
I know that.
And
yes.
He knows how to withdraw, and he also now knows how to, I won't say cover up, because that sounds deceitful, but what I mean is that he will let you see sometimes a certain facet or side of his nature, or a certain aspect of himself. But he's a very difficult person to see in the complete or the whole. You know, it's as if you catch a glimpse here and there, and then you try and put it together and try and make something of it. He's a curious, interesting, versatile sort of individual. Sometimes I've seen him in an entirely different guise, and you wouldn't even know it was Frédéric Chopin at all. You wouldn't even associate him with music. That's extraordinary.
That's
yes, well, you see, he has the ability. Once he played a trick on me.
Yes.
I don't know how to explain it. So once he played, I suppose you call it a trick anyway, but it's a joke, that's how it's used in the sound. It's a shocking joke. Anyway, one day I saw what I thought at the time was a very old man who looked, if you had to describe Moses, well, you wouldn't be far wrong, sort of thing. With a long grey beard and flowing hair, and with a sort of habit or sort of long gabardine sort of looking gown with a stick in his hand, and I saw him walking towards me.
Yes.
And I thought this struck me as being very odd, as a matter of fact, for various reasons.
Yes.
For one thing, one seldom sees very old people, very unusual. People in one's own condition and environment all seem very young. And that is because there is, in a sense, no old age here. But I hadn't discovered the fact that there wasn't any old age, and it didn't strike me there's anything, in a sense, odd about this apparition or this person. Anyway, he spoke to me. We stopped, and he spoke in a very sort of, I don't know how to put it, but in not exactly a religious way. I wouldn't say that.
Oh, I know.
But anyway, he gave me this impression that he was a very old sort of patriarch, you know.
Yes, yes.
And but the extraordinary thing was, he looked so old, but his eyes looked so young, and they twinkled, you know, and I thought, well, I didn't know. This man's an irascible old so-and-so, you know, and he was talking to me about the soul and the evolution and how necessary it was to sort of open up oneself to the highest possible. In fact, he was giving me quite a sort of narration and a lecture on what it seemed to me on a very high, I wouldn't say religious, but certainly a spiritual theme, you know.
Yes.
But all the time there was sort of twinkling and merriment there, and a sort of a kindly sort of admonition. Is that the word? Anyway, he asked me to walk with him, and I walked with him, and I was not looking at him all the time. As a matter of fact, strangely enough, it may seem odd, but something seemed to attract my eyes in the foreground, and in the distance there seemed to be this sort of illumination. And I didn't realize this, but it was his mind that was creating this illusion for me to look at, rather than look at him. But he was wily, and he was talking to me mostly on the religious, semi-religious sort of theme. And I was fascinated with this sort of glorious vision which lay in the far distance, and it looked like as if the sun was setting, but in the background was a magnificent city, I suppose you call it, it couldn't be much else, but it seemed to be bathed in this glorious sun that was sinking, and it was a very old city, and it looked as if it could have been something like Bethlehem or perhaps one of the old eastern cities. Anyway, I didn't never discovered what the city was or what it was. To me it looked so real, but I realized afterwards that this was a reflection of his mind creating this image like a kind of mirage. And Emily, I discovered afterwards that this place was the place in which he had lived and which he'd had many years and which he had played a very important part indeed. And anyway, but as we sort of went on and on, somehow instead of this building, or this number of buildings coming nearer, as one would expect, it seemed to be receding. And I thought this was most odd, because it seemed as if a perspective was all wrong, and distance seemed to be an illusion, and time itself seemed to stop still. It was almost peculiar, And then just, well, I realized afterwards, just as he was about to disappear, I didn't know he was going to disappear, but I heard his voice saying, well, I'll be seeing you again very shortly, but you'll recognize me, but not as you see me now. And I turned to look, and he'd gone, and I was alone. And the next thing I knew was that, well, it was like as if I'd had a kind of a dream. And I woke up in my own place, where I was in this big hostel or place reception centre that I told you about, I think, before. Anyway, I discovered, long time afterwards, at least it must have been some time afterwards, when I saw Frederick again, and he looked at me, and I thought there was something, I don't know what it is, but there's something that's so familiar. And then I realized the eyes. And he laughed, and he said, well, do you recognize me? I said, you're not the old man. He said, well, I was, but I'm not now. But that was one of my incarnations. And I was so astounded by this.
He said, you know who it was? I think he must have been tall, the old druid.
Well,
he came to me in a store, I remember, years ago.
Well, I didn't
I'm sure it is.
Well, he looked, now you come to mention that he looked exactly like probably what an old druid would look like.
Yes.
But this vast sort of city, I don't quite know how that links up with druids, but this city looked to me like an ancient, but then again, the city may have had no connection with him in the sense that it was his city in that particular period of his life. That evidently, I realize certain things anyway, it's quite evident to me that he is a very old soul, that he's had many incarnations, that he's been called under many names, and that he has lived in ancient times. I think there's no doubt that he's lived in ancient Egypt, he's lived in ancient Rome, and I think that he had an Assyrian incarnation. I think that he had several incarnations in other times, in other countries, and it's possible he was, as you say, a druid. Certainly now you mentioned he looked what one would imagine a druid could look like.
Yes.
But you know, he's a most extraordinary character because he has the ability to change. I don't necessarily mean that he will necessarily always change his features or his appearance, but one feels that there are times when he is almost a different person. He may be talking to you, or at least he may be conveying thoughts to you, which I suppose is more the correct thing to say, that all of a sudden the whole tone of his conversation and the whole manner of his self or him, what he's trying to express will be different. And the subject matter too. He sometimes he's like a will-o'-the-wisp, you know. He's a sort of here and there, and one minute you think he's with you, and he's gone. And I don't know why it should be, but I believe this is something which one can do, and that as one becomes more experienced in these things, one can recreate, I suppose it is, oneself in a strange kind of way. One can revert back to something that you once were, and you can never jump ahead until such time as you yourself obviously have made it possible. But it is interesting to know how all these different selves can be almost brought up, you might say,
it's
or you can be assumed.
Brought up, I suppose.
Yes, it's extraordinary. It's almost as if you might have a library, a volume, and each one is a life. And that you can reach out and pick it up and read it and assimilate and become it, part of it, or it, if you like. It's the most extraordinary thing. It's as if we are all. It's not just the book of life. I know this is, in a sense, allegorical or something, but the point is that we are all separate lives, and yet they all fit together. They're all part of each other. It's like a continuation. It's like one story in different chapters. Each chapter is important, and the other second or the third or the fourth or the fifth chapter couldn't be if it had not been for the first, second, and the third, and so on. It's as if every aspect of oneself, every part that one has been, every individual that one has become, is all part of some tremendous something which is so vast that one wonders if it can ever be complete. And I think that is the whole secret of existence. And now, as far as I can gather, it's the only thing in the now that seems to make any sense to me. Because I realize that you just cannot close the book. It's got to go on. And that's the only thing that makes life bearable. It's the only thing that makes life possible. This realization, there's always something new to add, something fresh to know, something new to discover. The excitement of being, the excitement of finding out, the excitement of changing and becoming and learning. And it's most fascinating.
That's glorious.
It's an extraordinary thing. Mm. It's not static. I think that's the whole secret,
yes.
That life is not static. If it were static, it would cease to be. In fact, you couldn't exist. It would be a bore. One would want death, complete oblivion. Here one feels the tingle of life, the excitement of life, and the knowledge that comes, and the new experience that follows, and the peoples that one meets, and the interesting things they can tell you, and the interesting things they can show you, and the wonderful way in which everything fits in. It's like some tremendous, glorious jigsaw puzzle. Every part has its place. Thing is to find out where it fits and what kind of picture it makes up. And then when you think you've finished it, it's by no means finished. You find it spreads out and goes further and further until possibly you can't even visualize the whole, but you can see it in part and you can understand it in part and you can see a little bit of the complete picture. But it's exciting and enthralling and wonderful. I, you know, honestly, I'm so glad I'm dead.
Yes, I was just thinking that myself. You must be a very, very happy person now.
Oh, I'm so happy because I feel at last, I know this sounds not odd, but well, it sounds almost like some sort of parson or something, but I feel at peace.
Yes.
And really am at peace. And it's, the extraordinary thing is that I suppose when one on earth thinks of peace, you think of complete tranquility with nothing, no rifts, no nothing to disturb. Well, strange thing is that although there's nothing to disturb and there are no rifts, there's always so much going on and one's part of it that one isn't irritated or affected in any way, detrimental, but one's all the time excited and on tenterhooks to know more. You know, it's being at peace here means being very much alive.
Yes. And that's why you're so very restless, you know, when you were on the earth, because I think you were the type of person who always wanted to know.
Well, I always wanted to experience it.
And you've got it now.
But I realize now that, looking back, I might have done so differently in some respects. But still, I don't want to have regrets. To have regrets in a sense is a bad thing.
No, don't do that.
I'm very happy. Yes. I want you to know that. Some part of it, really, believe me, is due to you. And due to my being able to come here and to speak. And it's helped me tremendously. It's released a great deal from me. And it's certainly helped me to lift myself up away from the earth conditions. I can't tell you what it's meant to me coming here. It's been wonderful. I must go because I can sense that the power's waiting and also I know the media must be tired. But it's been marvellous and I'll see you again all being well next week.
Right.
Anyway, I'll tell you more about your friend Frederick. I can tell you a few stories about him that
don't,
are really
intriguing. Don't think he will stop you for
a second. He won't stop me because he hasn't the ability to stop me.
Mm.
Actually, you know, no one can really stop anyone doing something if they want to because everyone has complete free will.
Yes.
But you know, he ought to tell you these things, not somebody else.
Anyway,
I must go. Anyway, God bless
you. I want to ask you about this picture. You know who took this picture of yours?
Goodness me, you asked me that. I can't, really, I don't remember. Long time ago. But I might remember and find out.
Yes.
But I must go.
All
right.